charismatic, passionate, has integrity, humble, servant, inspiring, faithful, persevering, positive, flexible, driven.
This is not about theory. This is about application. This is what you're trying to be. This is who we are that call ourselves leaders.
I'm Dave Ramsey, and you're listening to the Entree Leadership Podcast.
Welcome to the Entree Leadership Podcast. I'm Chris Hogan, and I'm happy to be back with you all. We're at the start of a new year. We have new opportunities, and I'm excited to work with you as we all strive to get better this year. Now, today on the podcast, we're talking to best-selling author Dr. Henry Cloud. Now, Dr. Cloud is a leadership consultant, best-selling author, and a speaker whose books have sold well over 5 million copies. He's probably most well-known for his Boundary series, and in 2011, his book, Necessary Endings, was called the most important book you will read all year. He also has Boundaries for Leaders. It was finalist for Business Leadership Book of the Year. So we're proud to have Dr. Cloud here with us. How are you today?
Good, Chris. Good to be here.
Thank you for joining us. Now, listen, I've read the book, and I have a few questions, and I want to tax your brain if I can.
At what percentage?
It's going up all the time. As much as I can, because I think our listeners are going to be able to really listen to this podcast and go back and put some things in place for themselves. My first question for you is, what is ridiculously in charge mean? What does that mean?
You know, it's a funny phrase, and actually came from a client of mine, a CEO who runs about a $20 billion operation. And we were talking about some things that he was griping about in the culture of the company. He said, well, you know, my team is this. And I said, well, why is that? And he said, well, because I brought in Joe from such and such a company, and he did that. And I said, why is that? And I kept asking him, why is that? And finally, he looks up and says, I guess I am ridiculously in charge, aren't I? And so he got it. You know, he realized that whatever we're finding in the culture, in the results, in the team, in the department, if we're the leader of that, whatever that is, then whatever we're finding, we got to point the finger back and say, I'm doing one of two things. I'm either creating that or I'm allowing it. And that's when the wake-up call comes.
Wow. So you're just all about accountability.
Accountability and accountability to something. You know, where a lot of businesses and teams and leaders get lost is they wouldn't be there probably if they weren't responsible and dutiful and accountable, mm-hmm. and they want to be held accountable. But too many times what they feel accountable to is either the need of the moment or somebody else's drivers or expectations or whatever that is, instead of getting above it and really figuring out what are not only, you know, why are we here and what is it we're trying to accomplish, but what are the specific drivers of that end goal. And if they don't set the boundaries to make that happen, they're all over the map.
Wow. So truly for a leader, how do you get above it? How do you begin to figure out what that is? What are some practical steps?
Well, the first one is getting over the fear of getting above it, because especially small businesses, they don't feel like they have the luxury, if you will. Well, I got to work. I can't go take a day off with my team or 2 days or plan something or whatever. And what they'll do is they will literally be afraid of getting above it and looking at it. Number one, because they feel like they got to work in the business. Well, you got to work on the business as well as in the business. And
absolutely.
And that's why it's so important. And you know, a lot of times business owners don't think they're big enough to do this yet. They'll think, well, you know, the big companies will bring in a facilitator or somebody to guide us through a day or whatever it is. And we're too small for that. You're not too small for that. The first thing you've got to do is establish what you're about and what the near term and short term and values and behaviors and all of that is about, and get above it. Or you're just like, you know, being driven by the urgent.
Wasting time. I talk to people a lot and I tell them, you have to be absolutely clear on what you are and what you're not. And I think
that's a great point, what you're not.
Yes, absolutely, because you don't want to waste time on the unnecessary.
And be driven by it. You know, in the book, Boundaries for Leaders, I talk about a lot of specific boundaries that leaders have to set in order to get results. And one of the first ones is to set things up so people know what they need to attend to and what they don't. Now, this is really interesting because it comes out of neuroscience. But if you ask the question, why do some leaders get great results and others don't? If you think about it, all leaders do the same thing. You know, they got a vision and they engage talent and they go execute a plan. They hold people accountable and then they try to fix what they find and try to get there, right? But some get results and some don't. And when we look under the hood about why do some people get results and others don't, one of the big ones is because they lead people in ways that people's brains can follow them. Now, we're going to get into the neuroscience of this for a moment here, right? So when your brain and the brains of your people, your sales team, you know, the product team, whoever it is, their brains are designed to move a goal from A to Z. Okay, that's the way they're wired. It's called the prefrontal cortex of the brain. And what that brain does, the very first thing and main thing it does is it plays like an air traffic controller. And what the air traffic controller does is three things. It's got to know what you've got to attend to get to the goal. Number two, what do you need to inhibit and not attend to? And number three, keep that current all the time. So when you said they got to know what they're not, how many times do you see a business owner say, we got to focus on this for this next quarter? This is going to be what we're about. And they have this meeting and everybody's charged up and they know where to go spend their time and energy and focus and all that. And then the next day, the same boss or same leaders sending out 46,000 emails that seem to have the same amount of angst to it as the main thing.
That's exactly right.
Now everybody's confused and their brains can't work.
So, okay. All right. Now, Dr. Cloud, in business, you got a lot of stuff you got to do. There are a lot of things that you have to give attention to.
Okay, I'm going to let's play here.
Okay.
Right? I'm going to interrupt just for their sake. I know what you mean, but for the listener's sake, when you say you got a lot of things you have to do, I would say, really? Why do you have to? Because as soon as we say we have to, what we've done is we've delegated the real executive power to the task. Like, the task is making me do this. The demand is making me do this. I had a CEO of a company just last week. We were sitting there talking, and he's about to, let's just call it an acquisition. Everything's about to get way bigger than what he's already done.
Okay.
And he already has thousands and thousands of employees. But he's been very much in the operator role and driving the operations of all those retail outlets. Okay.
Okay.
And so I was talking to him about, now that this is bigger, what he's got to do is figure out what the difference in his activities are going to look like. And he started looking at it and he couldn't get out of continually driving operations to worry about steering the big ship and what really drives the ship. And I said, all those things you've been doing have got to belong to somebody else. You don't have to do those. And he looked at me and he said, but if I didn't do that, what would I do all day? And see, that's the question. When you're owning a business or running a business or a team or a department, if the tasks that you, quote, have to do are telling you what to do, by definition, you're out of touch with reality. Because ultimately, what's going to happen is, there's going to be a reality. All those tasks are adding up to, and that's what's going to be what you own. And if you don't wake up to that one first and define those tasks, you got the is it the cart leading the horse? Is that the way you say it?
Yes, sir.
Yes,
that's exactly right.
Cart leading the horse. This is why I love Dave Ramsey, because his whole world started with, as I understand it, you know, in the personal finance, right? And what he did was he helped people understand, look, you are in control. It's not how many bills you got. It's not creditors. It's not your impulses. It's not your mother-in-law. You've got to work on the business of you and have this thing called self-control where you're defining, this is what I'm going to spend my resources on and this is what I'm not. Well, a CEO of a global enterprise, it's the same created order. They've got to realize, what are we going to pour the two things that we have, our time and our resources, into?
That's right.
And what are we not?
Right.
And you're in charge of that.
Wow. As a leader, how would I make sure that I don't confuse my team? How would I make sure?
For some leaders, stay home. That's the best thing they can do. I actually worked with a company, a pretty big company, about a I don't know how big, but big. And two guys that started it, and they were the founders, and one of the partners made a deal with the other partner, and he would pay him a seven-figure bonus if he promised to not be involved in the business every year. And he got his bonus if he never showed up.
Are you serious?
So when you say, how do you not confuse people? You might want to tell somebody to stay home.
But seriously, as you look at that, yeah. And you've hit on it, you talked about you have to prioritize, you have to be clear on what it is, but as you're talking to the team, especially if you're trying to motivate them and charge them, and you have multiple areas that you do have to be productive in, how can I do that without sounding the emergency alarm?
Let me make it as simple as possible. The first thing, if you would go back to the very first thing, if you think that you have to do what are called the executive functions, okay? So you've got to figure out, what are we going to attend to? And what are we not going to attend to? And then you got to keep that current in front of everybody at all times. Then your leadership role becomes putting legs to that, okay?
Okay.
So if you've told people, you know, in the next 6 months, we're going to have a 2 or 3-pronged emphasis that are going to be the strategic drivers to make this thing happen, all right? Now, you are in charge of constructing job descriptions and reward systems and motivators and pats on the back and discipline and correction and all that align with what you've told them. So when you've told them, you know, we're this product launch or this service launch, or we're going to go capture more of the market in this neighborhood first quarter, that is our main thing, then part of what you got to do is help them be relieved of the pressure of all this other stuff that they, quote, have to do.
Gotcha.
And when they hear you from a leader show up and say, you know what, I know all this junk has been on your head. Remember, the main thing is the main thing. This is what we're going to focus on. And that's what I'm going to be looking at and grading you on. Okay. So I don't want you coming back and feeling pressure from all these other things. If you do, you come to me because that's my problem.
Love it.
If I've given you more or different than I've told you is important, then I'm confused, and I don't want that confusion being on your head. I want you to know when you wake up every morning what it is that you're trying to drive.
I love that. That's absolute clarity.
Well, you know, one of the stories in Boundaries for Leaders was the story of Steve Jobs when he came back to Apple. It's really interesting. You know, if you remember back, you're way too young for this, but if you remember, you know, Windows had taken over the world and Steve Jobs had gone away and Apple had just kind of, they barely had a pulse. I mean, a few weirdo geeks used it, you know, and a bunch of elementary school kids, and that's kind of about it. So he comes back and he starts walking the halls of Apple and he finds out there's 30 something versions of the Mac. And he asks the same question over and over. He said, so if I want to tell my nephew to buy one, which one does he buy? And everybody sort of like looks around confused, right? So he brings everybody into a room and he goes up on a big whiteboard and he draws a 2x2 matrix with 4 quadrants. And across the top, he writes personal and professional. Down the side, he writes desktop and portable. He says, that's what we're going to do. We're going to make 4 computers, personal and professional, desktop and portable, because that's what matters to people. If you go into an Apple store today, that's what you find. You find the desktops and the portables, and you find the professional and the personal. And when people know what to focus on, they can get their energies, you know, revved up and they can fly, and that's what you want.
And that's exactly what Apple did.
That's what they did.
He put boundaries in place, didn't he, for Apple?
He absolutely did. Now, he did some other things that could have been improved on, because what, you know, when you say what do leaders need to do to not confuse people, it's really interesting. One of the things that one of the sections in the book is that the boundary, the leader is the steward of the emotional climate of the organization and their team.
I like that.
Now, why is that important? Because we want to feel good and be fuzzy and psychobabble? No, it's actually neuroscience. Here's what we know about the brain. That the performance centers of the brain that live in the prefrontal cortex, and that's creativity and planning and perseverance and adaptation and prioritization and solving problems and all that stuff, they live in a region of the brain that runs on a certain set of neurotransmitters or chemicals. Okay? That's called your higher brain. You also have another brain that's exactly the opposite. It is designed to secrete chemicals when you're threatened that shut down thinking and wake up reacting instead of thinking. Now, think about this. This makes sense. You're walking down a railroad track and you hear a train. Wah! The last thing you want to do is think. What are you going to do? You got to react. Shut down thinking. You're not calculating the weight and speed of the train. You got to do one or two things. You got to fight or flight. And that's what happens chemically in the brain when somebody's threatened. We're designed to do that. Now, when leaders are creating a positive emotional climate, and that doesn't always mean happy, that can mean urgently scared to death, but not toxic emotions that put people under threat. And so when we're yelling at people, you know, back to Steve Jobs, that is one thing he could have done better. But when we're threatening them and yelling at them and putting them down and shaming them and all of that, literally, as a leader, what you're doing is you're putting sewage water in the gas tank of the jet engine that you've hired to go fight the war for you.
That's right.
And it's slowing people down. It's confusing them. Their brains don't work. And so that's why we want a hard-driving performance environment, but we don't want one where you got people trying to run the ball down the field stepping on thorns because of the emotional climate you've built, and it has more to do with performance than people realize.
Wow. And so there's really the potential there for a leader to do a lot of harm or a lot of good.
Exactly. Bill Hybels says, you know, when a leader gets better, everybody benefits. They can do harm or good.
Yeah.
Now back to the brain. The boundaries for leaders, the whole book is organized around how people's brains really function to get results. And so here's another fact about the brain. Your brain, now Chris, don't take this personally, okay?
All right.
You are a control freak. Sorry. I know your wife's been telling you that, but, you know, I got to let you know.
Now, how do you know this?
Here's how I know this.
All right.
Because you're human.
Ah.
And here's what we know about the human brain. The human brain loves to be in control. Now, what happens is life trains us that we don't have control of ourselves because we get abused and we get manipulated and all of that, you know, kind of stuff that happens to us. And we're in situations that things outside of our control are affecting us. And what happens with people is they slowly learn that they don't have executive power over themselves. And so there's a shift that happens in many people's brains where they worry and think about and focus on everything that they don't have control of. And they lose focus on what they do have control of that actually drives a result. You know, I fly a particular airline that's going through a reorganization. And when I talk to the flight attendants, they're all just, you know, hate their lives. And I say, why? Well, the union this and the CEO this and, you know, the FAA and the economy and all of this. And it's all stuff they can't control. And if they realized, you know, you could smile. And if you smile at the guy in seat 3B, he buys all the travel for IBM.
That's right.
And if you made his 3 hours on this airplane a transformational experience from an awful day or an awful meeting that he's just come from or going to, then you have created an attachment to your business. And you guys are in this together now. And his or her brain is going to start writing checks towards what they can't even explain. But you're in control of that. And if business leaders can help the people in their teams, and this really is a big deal in sales. If they see what we do, I'm sidetracking here, but what we do is we get people oriented towards a goal. And that's great. The brain has to know its goals. But knowing your goal is not going to get you to the goal line. What we've got to do is get them oriented to the behaviors they are in control of that are going to reach that goal.
That's right. Okay.
So if I'm trying to lose 30 pounds and all I think about is losing 30 pounds and I'm oriented towards the scales, then I might as well be, you know, bring on all my favorite foods, right? Because I'm not thinking about what will drive that result. What will drive that result, what I need to measure, is not how much I weigh, but did I go on a 45-minute walk today? Did I keep my calories under 1,800? Did I do this and did I do that? And I need to measure that and hold myself accountable to that because that's what I can control. And if I do that, we don't have to worry about the scales. And what business owners do is they get obsessed about the result instead of helping people define the drivers of that result, empowering them. You're in control of that. You can make those calls. You can go do this. You can smile. You can get the quality up. You can get expensive. You control that. And everybody's empowered to do that. The brain just goes crazy and the business does better.
You're right. If you can create that positive chain reaction, but somebody's got to go first. And that's the leader's job, is to make sure that they're clear on where they want to go.
That's why I love companies where the leadership, you know, says, look, what we do is we turn this thing upside down. It's not the leaders that sit on top of a pyramid.
Yes. And that's really what entree leadership is about. It's that servant leadership. You know, I came from the banking industry where everything was about at the top.
Right.
You know, the CEO and everybody did everything to feed there. And then coming here with Dave, it was an opportunity to see that triangle flipped literally over. And it's literally where it starts with that leader trying to do everything they can for everyone else.
That's right.
And that's a difference. There's a difference in spirit, Dr. Cloud, and there's a difference in attitude when you do that.
Well, you're exactly right. And what you're seeing in spirit and attitude is actually the fruit of what's going on in people's hearts, minds, souls, and they're literally the hardwiring of their brain. I mean, when you empower people, there are different chemicals that are set free inside of the neurotransmitters than the toxic ones that are happening when you're controlling them or yelling at them or micromanaging them, or they're confused about, well, what am I supposed to do today?
Wow. Now, listen, I want to shift gears while we got you here. We've been talking about boundaries for leaders, but I also want to talk about the other book you have out, and that's Necessary Endings.
Yes, sir.
Now, in this book, which is, I absolutely love it, you talk about the importance of pruning. Now, I like the metaphor.
But what if you're not a gardener? What does that mean, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. What am I pruning? What is it, and how do I do it, and why do I need to?
Well, let me start with a story that I talk about in there, and that it's just one of a gazillion examples that are like this. The Steve Jobs example I gave you a minute ago is the same thing. A friend of mine bought a company that at the time was about $25 million or so in sales. In about 5 years, he took it to $500 million, and on his way to a billion, I asked him one day, I said, so how'd you do this? He said, well, the first thing I did, and I'll never forget this phrase, he said, the first thing I did was I looked at everything the company was doing, and I realized that the life of the company, and that's the phrase, he said, the life of the company was in about 20% of its activity. I said, oh, the other 80% was losing money, and here's the kicker. Here's the leadership principle. He said, oh, no, it was all profitable. But the life of the company was in about 20% and the future. So the first thing I did was I got rid of the 80% so we could have all those people and all those resources and all that energy focusing on where the life is and where the future was. And he got a lot of pushback, and it took about a year to do it. But he said, that's really what we did. So the metaphor I use in the book is about pruning, because that's kind of built into the warp and the woof of anything that is growing on this planet, whether it's a person or a business or, you know, a rose bush. So when I decided, okay, now pruning is going to be my metaphor, what I did was I went and talked to some smart people that grow stuff, right? And I'm talking to these high-end gardeners that make these beautiful gardens. And what they told me was, you prune in three instances, always. And Now, that's another important word, always, because you don't prune when there's just a problem. Pruning is something you're doing every week.
Yes, sir.
Right?
Okay.
Or every season or whatever.
Right.
So what they said was there's three instances. Number one, a rose bush is going to produce more buds than it can sustain, than it can feed. So the gardener's got to go pick out what are the best buds, the 20%, that can reach the vision the best, prune the other ones so those best buds can have the water, the minerals, everything that the, you know, the vine or the bush is providing. That's number one. Number two, there are some buds and branches that are sick and they're not going to get well. They try to make them well. They fertilized them and they give them plant food. In California, where I'm from, they talk to them, get in a hot tub, and, you know, but they do everything they can to try to fix them. But they're resistant. They don't want to. They don't want to give them the program. Whatever it is, they're not going to get better. And so they've got to prune those. And then the third category is there's a bunch of branches that are dead and just taking up space. Now, if you do anything in life, from look at your calendar to the meetings you have, that maybe someday there was a reason for that committee or that task force or that meeting or that structure or that process in your company or your business. But if you look at the season you're in now, that's just dead and taking up space, or a product line or a strategy, or sometimes it's a person.
Mm.
And they're resistant, and you tried everything, and they're sick, and they're not going to get well when it comes to this business, and it's time for a necessary ending. And that doesn't mean that you have failed or they have failed or life has failed. It's part of anything that's alive. And you see it from the Bible to textbooks on gardening to business to anatomy and everything else, that there is a life cycle of pruning that which is not the best for what we're trying to do, doesn't fit, might be good, but it's not on our mission, like you said earlier, or it's sick and not going to get well, or its day is gone. And it, let me ask you a question. Why did it take a bankruptcy judge to shut down Pontiac, a brand of General Motors that had not produced a profit in 40 years? And when they went through bankruptcy, the bankruptcy judge ends up doing the pruning. You got the smartest car executives in the world, and for 40 years, why aren't they getting rid of this thing? I'll tell you why. Because they're emotionally attached to it,
yes,
or
sir.
They're afraid to make that leadership call. What are we doing here today?
We are helping people.
And how are we doing that?
We are extracting information that you have.
Okay. And how specifically, technically, are we doing that?
Because we're...
Are we standing on a soapbox in a park yelling to people?
Not at all.
What are we doing? What's it called?
We are delivering this through a podcast.
A podcast. All right. Now, this is awesome. You just made my whole world. All right. So what you said was, we are helping people because we're taking information and we're giving it to them. It's going to empower them to do better in their business. All right. You go back just... I'm going to say 10, 15 years ago, what would you and Dave Ramsey be doing? You would be helping people, disseminating information to help them do their business better. Okay?
That's right.
But you would have been doing it maybe through a cassette tape or a CD or something like that. And somebody one day had to wake up and say, you know what? The future is in this thing called podcasting. And this is now. It's not the future anymore, right? And we got to shut down all this old stuff we're doing and traveling around, you know, trying to be in every basement every week or whatever, because people are going to want this in the gym, downloading it while they're working out.
That's right.
And what hasn't changed? What hasn't changed is the big reason we're here, getting information to people to help them. What has changed is the pruning of how we do it, because that season is gone. And that's what the great leaders figure out.
Wow. Let me ask you this. In the book Necessary Endings, you talk about, you know, the people resist endings. We're great at starting stuff. And when you were telling that analogy, where you have many more buds than can be sustained by the bush, and I know people that have ideas out the yin yang.
You got it. Let me ask a question. People driving around in their cars or wherever you're at. Would you rather go to Walmart and buy a new sweatshirt, or would you rather go home and go through your drawer and figure out which two you got to throw away to make room for the two you just bought?
Let's just go on to the store.
That's right. And that's what life does. Another day, another sweatshirt, another business line, another strategy, another SKU, another product, another this, that, and the other. That's great. We're supposed to be, like you're saying, starting and adding and one more small group and this committee. And that. But what are you getting rid of to make room for that?
Yeah. Well, and I saw a commercial a couple of weeks ago, and it was some soft drink or whatever, and it was talking about and. You know, you get this and this.
And, yeah.
And I thought about that. As humans, we're always looking for the and. We're not looking for the if then, you know, that college algorithm type thing. If I do this, then this must be reduced or this needs to go away. We just keep piling stuff on our plates. And eventually that's how people feel like that they can't get anything done.
That's right. And, you know, I don't want to turn into a theologian here, but what you just said is really, really important, and it is at the essence of most business failure. Because when you said and, you know, I want this and that, it is the human condition to want to be God. You know, we want to be omnipotent, and we want to be grandiose, and we want to be omnipresent, and we think we can do everything, and we think, if I can believe it, I can achieve it, and the universe belongs to me. Now, we might not say that sentence, but we act it out in thinking, oh, I can take on that project, or I can take on this project, or I can take on this, or I can coach this person, or yeah, I'll have time for. And we don't realize we're not omniscient, we're not omnipresent, and we're not omnipotent. So we cannot have it all, nor do we have all of the gifts and all the talents that it's going to take to build this entity. So once we humble ourselves and say, here are my gifts, here's my time, here's my direction, here's my abilities, and I've got to humbly go ask others to give me feedback and put limits on me and contribute their talents, so we're going to create this team that's bigger than me and a purpose that's bigger than me. Now we've gotten into something called transcendence, and it'll end up being a lot bigger than me if we can do that.
You talk about there's a difference between pain with a purpose and pain for no good reason.
Yeah.
What's the difference?
One of us got a purpose and the other's for no good reason.
Can we go a little deeper?
Yeah. You know, no pain, no gain, right? But there's a lot of pain with no gain. So pain doesn't equal gain. It's what kind of pain we're doing it. And generally, it's the kind of pain that we're choosing. Now, a lot of people want to have pain-free lives.
Mm-hmm.
They're called addicts. I'm going to say that again.
Mm.
A lot of people want to have pain-free lives, and they're called addicts. Whenever anything's distressing or difficult or painful, they'll turn away from that and turn to some sort of drug.
Mm-hmm.
You know, sex, drugs, rock and roll, money, food, whatever. Because I want to feel better right now. Now, what that ends up doing, when I avoid the pain that's going to solve a problem, and instead I choose avoidance of that pain, what I'm going to end up with is a lot of pain. It doesn't solve anything. And it's the consequences of not choosing the good pain. All right? You know, simple example. And please don't take this personally out there. If you're a dentist, God bless you. God called you into a wonderful, wonderful career of helping people. But I hate dentists. And I hate dentists because when I was a little kid, now I'm going to sound like a psychologist here, but when I was a little kid, I had a psycho dentist that just didn't believe in Novocaine. And I just had the worst experiences whenever I go to the dentist. And I slowly learned, I don't want to go to that pain. That hurts to go there.
Yes.
And I started avoiding them. Well, what happens is when you avoid a little pain, you know, you got a little cavity. Well, I'm not going to go, you know, it's not hurting me enough now to go. I'm not going to go. It's going to turn into a unnecessary big pain that if you had taken the little pain, you wouldn't have that big pain.
Mm.
And sometimes if you'll take the little pain of going and sitting down with the person you work with or your customer, or your spouse or a friend or whatever, just take that little pain and go have a little teeth cleaning there. It's going to hurt a little bit. And sit down, resolve that issue, mm-hmm. put your arms around it. It's going to be uncomfortable to confront that. It's going to be uncomfortable to deal with that. But once you choose that good pain, once you, it's like going to the gym. You know, who wants to get out of bed at 6 in the morning and go to the gym? Some people, but not me. But if you choose that pain, then there's a lot of pain, like, you know, joints that won't work, mm-hmm. that you're going to, unnecessary pain you're going to avoid. And that is one of the most important principles of leadership, because to make these hard calls, to fire somebody or to shut something down, you know, that's a choice to go through some pain. Mm. But if we avoid it, the unnecessary pain of going out of business or having that person screw up our culture or the teams, you really don't want that.
No, and you're absolutely right. And for the leaders out there that hear that, and they, when you mention pain, if someone's name pops in your mind, if there's an individual's face.
I think I do that right now. Okay. 1, 2, 3.
All right.
Pain.
Yeah. And you're thinking of that individual. As Dr. Cloud just said, go deal with it.
Go deal with it.
You're going to be uncomfortable, but go deal with it. And I love it, because a little alcohol will cleanse the wound and can allow the opportunity for some things to heal.
That's right. That's exactly right. Now, I'm going to say one more thing. When some people had that vision come up of that pain, you said, go deal with it. They went, and they got really scared because it looked like, but it's too big. That's fine. Okay, I got a knee problem right now, and it causes me pain. I got to go deal with it. But when I look at that knee problem, what am I going to do? It's too big for me, so what do I have to do? I got to go get some help to deal with that pain. So I'm going to go talk to a doctor, and he's going to, or she's going to take me into a room with a staff and some painkillers and some knowledge and some wisdom they bring in there and a little experience. They've done this before. If I cut on it, it'd be my first one, but I want somebody who's done this before. And what we're going to do is we're going to surround ourselves with the strength to deal with that particular surgery. Now, most of the things in life we can probably handle, but sometimes they may be too big, and you got to go sit down and bring some help in there. You got to get a coach or a mentor, or, you know, subscribe to Dave's, you know, materials and learn more before you go do that surgery. But it doesn't get us off the hook because it's too big. And if it's too big, that's usually a sign that we better get on the hook and get some help to do it, because it's going to get us.
As you look at this, one of the other things in the book you talked about is being able to differentiate between what needs to end versus what needs to be fixed.
Yeah.
Now, how as I look at that.
Yeah, put a name to that one.
Yeah.
I mean, if people are seeing employees or, you know, friendships or whatever, that's right. That's right. One of the phrases I put in the book that a lot of people have connected with is that hope might be your biggest enemy.
Now, I'm going to be honest with you. I read that, and immediately I was taken aback.
Right.
Because that's opposite of anything I've ever heard.
Yeah.
Now, why do you say that?
Well, because hope's a virtue, right? Okay. I mean, without hope, we can't live, right?
That's right.
If things are bad and we don't have any hope for the future, we'll take the black pill. You know, it's over, right? But hope, while hope is a virtue, hope must place itself in some sort of an objective reality, okay? Now, if we have an objective reality to hope in, then we need to fuel hope and spend hope and get behind hope and spread hope and encourage hope. But if you're down a wrong road, we're sitting here in Nashville, right? And if I'm trying to go to New York and I've started out down the interstate and I'm going west, and my leadership principle is I'm an optimist, you know, and I got hope, and I'm going to drive these people, and we're hoping. Yeah, let's just keep hope. Every time I spend hope, I'm a mile further away from New York City.
Yes, sir.
Because I'm on a wrong road, and there's nothing objective that's going to make that turn into the right road. And so what I tried to do in the book was create a paradigm where people can look at an employee, a product line, you know, a strategy or whatever, and ask themselves, is perseverance and hope, is spending more time, energy, and resources on this, do I need to suck it up and keep going because this baby is gonna turn around? Or are there real diagnostics that I can know that more effort is not going to produce a different result? You know, when I was a little boy growing up in Mississippi and we did a lot of hunting, they, you know, we had a lot of dogs and deer hunting and coon hunting and rabbit hunting and bird hunting. And you could just, you'd start training a dog, right? And after a while, I remember some of those old men just turn around saying, that dog ain't going to hunt. And it just ain't going to hunt. And so to keep hoping that this is going to be the dog that ends up giving us supper, you need to get hopeless really fast. And hopelessness, in a sense, is one of the greatest leadership attributes that leaders can have, the courage to say, to spend more time and energy going in this direction, cassette tapes.
Mm-hmm.
We can market these cassette tapes. We can scream. We can have the best information in the world. But if we don't go podcast, then it is hopeless. We got to remember in everything you do, family, business, whatever, your role is not who you are. You are a person that's going to live out that role that comes from your makeup and your character and how you are focusing on developing that person. And that's where the real results come from.
Listen, thank you, Dr. Henry Cloud, for taking the time to join us. Again, everyone, he has written the book, Boundaries for Leaders, finalist for Business Book of the Year. And absolutely, it's been a pleasure talking with you, hearing your thoughts and your passion, especially for leaders, but people also. And so thank you for what you do.
Good to be with you. Enjoyed it.
Take care. We want to thank Dr. Henry Cloud for taking the time to join us here on the podcast. Dr. Cloud will also be at our SMART conference. That's going to be March 29th in Dallas, Texas. A huge opportunity to learn from him about how do you apply boundaries and necessary endings. I want to let you all know that next week, February 5th, we're going to be in Boise, Idaho for the Entree Leadership One Day event. So if you're in the area, come hang out with us. We'd love to see you. And I also want to remind you to come over to EntreeLeadership.com. Come on in and join the conversation. The Entree Leadership team has been putting together all kinds of content and information to help grow you as a leader. Stay plugged into this Entree Leadership stuff. Keep learning and keep leading. Until next time, grow yourself, grow your team, grow your profits.